You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into this Thursday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. We continue our week of previewing centers. You listened to Domantas Sabonis yesterday. Today we'll do Kylo Quinn. As always, I am one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, Tony East. And on the other line with me, I have a guy who could actually talk McDermott as well as Kylo Quinn because of his New York ties. Tommy D, that's D-E-E is his last name. His Twitter is at Thomas C, the letter, and then D-E-E. He is from the Step Back over at Fansided. He works for is going to be at Blake and Associates doing some scouting this year. And he's at patreon.com/TommyD with some great Knicks posts. How are you, man? That was a long intro.
It is, Tony. You know, I got my hands in a lot of different things and really enjoy that part of it. Thanks for having me. David Locke is one of my favorite people, so I'm always happy to jump on a Locked On podcast.
Dave, I got to be in the booth with David when the Jazz were in town, and I've never met a guy more enthusiastic about his job than David.
He's the best. He really is.
The best in the biz. He was awesome. That was a great time. But
even his direct messages are intense, you know? I love that. That's the best.
It's such a true statement. But we're not here to talk about radio, guys. We're here to talk about basketball players. And we're here to talk about, as I told you before we recorded, a very smiley basketball player, Kylo Quinn. I saw him at Media Day on Monday, and he walked in and, you know, immediately smiles. All his stories are funny. He talked about how he and Vic would FaceTime in the summer, and Oladipo would sing to him on the phone, which made me laugh. You know, he just seems like a very infectiously happy guy, and he'll, you know, fit right in with the chemistry of the team. But you watched O'Quinn a lot more than I did last year. I've been trying to catch up, but, of course, you know, catching up on 82 games takes some time. Just give me your overall impressions of him before we really get going.
So I go back to 2012 after his great play in the tournament at with Norfolk State. I ended up at Portsmouth with Blake and, you know, for Blake and Associates and the guys at Portsmouth who do obviously an amazing job. He was the best player there, and he's the same person then as he is, or at least you've seen him more recently than I have. That's just who he is. He's a very engaging, very happy guy, and he gets it, he understands his role, and just talk specifically about the Knicks. You know, he knew he wasn't going to start. He knew the team was basically going to be built around Chris Apps Porzingis, and last year was going to be Porzingis's really, you know, breakout year based off of trading Carmelo Anthony. And, you know, just let's see if this kid really is the franchise. And he was, up until dunking on Giannis and blowing his knee out. He was an all-star, and Kyle was the consummate teammate. And as I sort of see how the Pacers rosters come together, he's the guy that you want in the locker room. He keeps everybody light-hearted. You know, he doesn't take things too seriously. You know, but he wants to win, and you know, there was a lot of narrative around him coming back home. He originally from Queens, but inside of him is a guy who is just a very, very smart player who knows where he needs to be at all times. And if you're cutting when he catches the ball on the high post, and now he's a rotation player, you know, you're not going to necessarily have him all the time playing with the first teamers, but you know, for that second group, you want to get a lot of easy baskets and backdoor cuts and dribble handoff screens. And he's really good at that. That'll get you easy baskets, whether even if they're twos. And that leads into sort of, you know, that full, if you want to get into some sort of three-quarter court or half-court pressure defense, that really helps when you can get an easy make.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what I was going to go with as my overarching thesis of Kylo Quinn talk. Is, you know, the second unit in Indiana, now with Tyreek, this isn't as much the case, but last year it's kind of devoid of creation outside of actions. And I feel like with O'Quinn now, and, you know, McDermott, will get to him too, how they fit together and stuff, you know, you have a way to create with that's more creative than just blasting pick and roll all the time or and stuff like that. And, you know, Corey Joseph is a very willing cutter. Doug McDermott is an extremely good cutter. Tyreek Evans, because of the gravity he has all over the court, you know, he can be a good cutter if he needs to be. I think, you know, just throwing it to O'Quinn at the elbow is like an offensive option when he's in the game. And I think that's going to open up a lot for this team.
And you can create more space with him too. You could throw it to him a little bit higher. You know, it doesn't have to just be at the elbow. He can shoot. His release is very slow. But if he needed to stretch from deep, you know, the stats probably don't support that. But, you know, he can, the entry can be a little bit further out, and then you can create space in 5-on-5. But his value to me certainly is not only being able to be a part of easy baskets on the defensive side. When you're playing 5-on-5, you know, he's a very aware help defender, probably not the best. I think the thing that keeps him from being a starter, aside from, you know, guys obviously like Miles Turner or Thaddeus Young and, you know, and Bogdanovich, who you guys have, were terrific. It's a bonus who I love. It's just more of his lateral stuff is not great. He's not a great lateral defender in pick and roll, so he can be exposed there. It gives up a lot of space. But in terms of help and protecting, he's not a rim runner, but he can protect the rim defensively. And again, if you can get baskets and you're playing 5-on-5, he's going to be really good for you on that second team.
Yeah, that's good to know about the lateral movement. I've always seen that with him too. Like, if he's in the right position, it'll go well. But if he has to move at all, it's not the prettiest sight. But on the flip side there, I think the second unit is going to be slower paced just in general. They have a lot of good perimeter defensive cogs. They have a lot of good rim protectors. They have a decent wing defender in Tyreek Evans. I think they can slow the game down when he's out there, which will be nice. But his playing time will be scarce to come by. Pritchard's talked about how when they met in the summer, he pretty much told them, like, hey, you're in the Al Jefferson role if you come here, which, you know, very little playing time, only if there's injuries. But we love you for the culture and all that stuff. And like you said earlier, you know, he's happy with that and he will fill in great there. But I want to ask you a question about something that I saw in the stat sheet. And then, you know, I've only watched him last year, not 2 years ago or 3 years ago or anything like that yet. So I haven't really seen his growth. But last year was far and away his best shooting from the field ever. What was the biggest boon in his scoring? That, like, what made that happen?
Face up shooting, face up early entries, you know, giving up or not giving the ball up in a handoff situation and basically just squaring up and Jeff Hornacek saying, like, just if the shot is there, take it. He's not a catch and shoot guy. He's more of a handoff and shoot guy once he squares up. If you remember Charles Oakley was not a he wasn't a post up player at all. He was a safety valve, certainly in desperation times. You know, the shot clock came down to 2 or 3 and the ball found, you know, his hands. He would have to shoot it. But when they ran stuff specifically for him, which they used to do, and this is going back a lot of years, he could just face up, square up, and knock down shots. And O'Quinn can do the same thing. That is a very useful tool, especially when you're trying to cover cutters and trying to make sure that Oladipo doesn't get the ball back in his hands. So his shooting for me, when I saw it, it was just more of a, like, this is a really solid square up, you know, maybe even a jab step, but face up a la Charles Oakley, knock down that 15, 18 footer. And he did it consistently. And the numbers showed that for sure.
That helps with spacing too. Like you said, he does, you know, somehow bend gravity on the court despite only making 23 of his 103 3-point attempts in his career. But that's such a myth that you have to be a good 3-point shooter to space the floor. So you talked about his maybe not flat footedness. That's not perfect, but his slow lateral movement around the basket on D and O really. And I also noticed, you know, he's kind of a high turnover guy. Would you say those are his biggest two weaknesses, or is there something else that really stands out to you?
Turnovers come from when the ball's in your hands and you're not ready for it, and you just don't know how to handle the ball. He's not a ball handler at all. And you know, if he was put in a mismatch situation where maybe he's posting up a smaller guy, that's not his game either. You know, he's not a big. He doesn't utilize his trunk and just take it. Like, there was never a. I never got the sense watching him that they were always ever like, hey, listen, if you can pin down a guard in a switch, you know, do that. He just doesn't have that game. So whenever that happens, that's when I think those turnovers basically happen. And again, he's not a ball handler. But for what you guys are going to do, I feel just, you know, not knowing much about it, you're not going to put him in those situations. And so I don't think the turnovers are a big deal.
Yeah, you know, Sabonis had a high turnover rate last year. They asked him to do a lot of creation in the pick and roll off the bench. So Ivo Quinn is starting to that role. I'm not sure that would go great, but again, he's a great passer. He'll figure it out.
I think Sabonis is, from what I've seen, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, I think Sabonis's mistakes and turnovers is that he's just not used to the speed. Like, he's still so young, he's getting used to the speed of the game, so he's sort of in a rush. Kyle's not in a rush, believe me. You'll see him. He's not in a rush to do anything, unless the shot clock is obviously winding down. So if he touches the ball early in the possession, you shouldn't have to worry about turnovers.
Some of it with Sabonis is kind of that. You know, his IQ is almost like too good for his own good. Like, he'll catch and he'll turn and he'll expect the guy to be cutting because he'll feel the rotation on his back, but the guy's not cutting and he'll just throw it to nobody, or, you know, stuff like that. That's like, what he did was probably right, but what someone else did was wrong, and it hinders him, you know, stuff like that, that you, like, it looks bad on the wrong guy in the stat sheet. But he's kind of, go ahead.
The opposite of that is O'Quinn and McDermott. So they knew each other really well, and they would have, I think we talked about, you already seen that tape of those highlights of just him always finding McDermott on flex cuts. If you got a guy who can flex cut the baseline and finish, O'Quinn's going to find him on that second team. I don't know if it's Tyreek. Obviously, it's McDermott because he's on the team too, if he gets minutes as well. But they have that simpatico that's really fun to watch.
Yeah, and that, I'm excited for that again. You know, they run Boyan through a bajillion cuts at the start of every possession last year. So I can't imagine McDermott's role being extremely different than Boyan's, just on the second unit instead of the first. So I think that will happen a lot, assuming O'Quinn plays. McMillan did talk about yesterday the rotation's going to be 9 or 10 guys. And I think we know who the 9 would be, but the 10th guy, you know, is it TJ Leaf? Is it Kyle O'Quinn? You know, how that all shakes out is going to be pretty fascinating. I think most of O'Quinn's time, though, opens up with an injury, which, you know, who knows what lineups that'll Shea come onto the court with, which will be fascinating. But that's kind of been his role his whole career, which is super interesting.
And I could tell you that just as the Noah news is, you know, it is what it is, right? But he's been able to get on the court because two years ago, Noah had a hamstring. Last year, Noah had the suspension. So O'Quinn, the insurance policy came in and was very productive based off of exactly that. Guys get hamstrings, you know, guys get twisted ankles in training camp. It just happens. You know, coaches, you know, these guys want to compete. They want to get out there and they're fighting for their spots. So they play hard and maybe their bodies just aren't there. So if you get somebody who gets a hamstring, Kyle's a great guy to have on the roster, no question.
Yeah, and bigs get hurt more often than other guys just because more contact all the time. Not used to lumbering up and down. So he'll definitely get opportunities to play. I mean, Al Jefferson played almost 1,000 minutes last year. Now, I'm not worried about it. It's very fascinating. And I think promising that he's willing to accept that kind of role with no quote unquote guarantee of playing time. Yes, McDermott. We can talk McDermott too. I think you loved on McDermott, don't you? Am I correct in that?
You know, it's for sure. I mean, the one thing that I don't love is that he's a classic tweener. You know, I mean, that's just a fact. So for the narrative of today's sort of quote unquote, and I break it down, you know, I always say there's regular season NBA and there's playoff NBA, right? Playoffs NBA. So, you know, McDermott in regular season NBA, yes, he's slower. So he impacts pace. Although, you know, I really felt like he really put a lot of good work in for the Knicks last year. And he was able to catch the ball and make shots off of spot. And like I said before, flex cuts and being able to read his defender and beat his defender. You don't have to beat your defender up the court. If you're playing 5-on-5, all you have to do is just look at them and see they're not seeing you and then break back door. And, you know, you get layups and dunks. And he did that a ton. So I think for those, again, sort of easy baskets, and you can set up defense 5-on-5 if you want to go 3-quarter court, which I think Nate likes to do, then, you know, he's a very valuable piece in those late first or early second, you know, 8-minute clips that can stretch out a lead from 5 to 7. The Knicks obviously didn't have a lot of leads. So, but for you guys, what you'll see is if you look really, really deep into his minutes, when he plays this year, if he's getting the rotation minutes, he'll be a plus in the first half, in the late first, early second with that group, and that'll stretch a lead out from 3 to 7. And that's important. That's really helpful in the grand scheme of trying to win regular season games.
especially in the game flow. Yeah, I like the, and I like that you said that the playoff versus regular season thing too. Beyond pace, even for McDermott, you know, guys who have are very limited defensively, which for tweeners is all of them. they really get played off. They really get played off the court in the playoffs, and I would worry about that a little bit. But I think the Pacers do have the personnel to get around it. You know, Thaddeus Young, for a power forward, quote unquote, is an excellent perimeter defender. So if they're on the court at the same time, you just have McDermott guard interior and Thad guard exterior, and that should work out appropriately. But in the playoffs, McDermott's flaws will be even more glaring. At the same time, they did not have anyone with even close to his gravity of floor spacing last year. And this is an example of where shooting is all of it. But
and he makes those. And he makes and I would challenge a little bit there that he's a tweener in the sense that he's really a three. Like he's not a two, he's definitely not a two offensively, but defensively he can guard three and four if right. another team goes small based on a matchup. So offensive tweeners who can shoot from range off of catch are definitely valuable. You know, but for the Knicks, they weren't thinking about that because of just the rebuild year. And again, on a good team, I think he could be very valuable.
Yeah. And I like looking at his splits of shooting on the Knicks versus the Mavs, just to see how they used him differently. Shot almost 50% of his shots as threes on the Mavs versus only 39% on the Knicks. I don't know if that's more system based, but also O'Quinn let him cut more, you know, it's just a lot of factors there, but it's interesting to break down and see which side he'll be closer to when he does suit up here. And now we can talk about the two together because that's what we should do, right? the natural progression of the conversation. And we talked about their cutting, and I saw a video, I forget what the account was, but it was like four clips in a row of O'Quinn just beaming it to McDermott as he cuts baseline, and they were all fantastic. What else they do all together? I feel like DHOs wouldn't really work with these two just because of their speed and lack of ball handling. But what else they do well when they share the court together?
That's a great one. For me, you know, he's – if the end result that we're looking forward to sort of define as, you know, who's the guy that is the reason of the two of them, you know, why there's some success, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
For me, it's, you know, it's McDermott's shot-making ability and ability to stretch out the half court. By faking backdoor, he's able to catch a pin down, and then O'Quinn can sort of throw him a pass. They ran a lot of horns. They ran a lot of modern triangle, which
yuck.
The narrative of not modern triangle was never received well in New York, although it's basically just a fancy way of saying you can throw the ball into the mid post and find people in a lot of different areas of the court based off of reads, because that's where the triangle is.
The Warriors do it. People don't make fun of them.
They do it better than maybe the Bulls did it in the 90s, for sure. You know, once they figure out Durant in the mid post with his back to the basket, if he continues, you know, if he stays there, that's a whole different story. But the fact that they haven't even put really that into play, Durant's post-up ability, and that's going to take me off onto the tangent of LeBron and how he's evolved over the last couple of years, and I'm sure that's a topic for another day. But as it relates to McDermott and O'Quinn, it really, at the end of the day, basketball offensively is a two-man game. If you have two people working and knowing exactly where everybody's going to be at some point, whether it's point guard five, point guard four, point guard three, you know, two, four, two, whatever it is, as long as there's a connection, you're going to get great looks, and those two have a great connection.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you saw that last year with Vic and whoever the five was down the stretch. I'm hoping Vic and Tyreek can be there this year. But I like that point. You know, that's why the Rockets were able to hum so well. Every time they had two of the smartest guys in the NBA on the court offensively, they could set up pretty much any shot they wanted. You got anything else you want to talk about with these two guys before I get you out of here?
Just that you're going to enjoy them. You know, and this is coming from a lifelong, you know, Knicks fan who's sort of built a career in and around the NBA. And, you know, I I think it started with Donnie Walsh. When I was in practice with Donnie Walsh, and I tell this to anybody who would want to care to listen, when I first started covering and talking and doing stuff with Knicks and around the Knicks, Donnie Walsh was the greatest guy I've ever met. And I mean that in such a term of endearment, because he didn't care who you were. He didn't care who you worked for. All he wanted to do was talk basketball. He wasn't interested in, people trying to, reshape quotes. So if you sat down next to him and said, "Hey, listen, why do you think Jordan Hill is like Antonio or Dale Davis?" And you'd be there for 15 minutes. Steph Curry and, an older school point guard, and you'd be there for another 10 minutes. And, talk about the game. Obviously the obvious stuff was talking about the battles between, game 694 in Indiana, like
Knicks stuff.
and that's who he was. And that's where I was like, my hate for the Pacers went away whenever I would sit with Donnie. And ever since then, I've gained a lot of respect. So, I guess it's the long-winded way of saying, you guys are going to enjoy McDermott and O'Quinn because they play the game the right way. They're going to be smiling, and they're going to help what is already. And I'm a huge Pritchard fan, and I always have been. So, certainly going to take. I believe you guys take the next step this year, I'll enjoy watching. And that's really hard for me to say, but it's true.
I'm holding you to that. I'm excited to watch certain players on your Knicks, but not the Knicks as a whole.
Understood. Totally understand.
We can have that conversation off air, though. That would be more fun.
And listen, at the end of the day, if we're playing in the playoffs, I hate you tomorrow, but we're a long way from there. So, that's that.
Well, we might have to have you on for some game previews and recaps this year. Knicks media is what it is, but I like guys who actually know the gritty X's and O's. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Tony, I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate you saying that, because X's and O's is my life, and the game is my life as well. So I'm just super pumped that you asked me to come on.
Well, you're not done. You gotta promote some stuff and yourself.
Yeah. So on patreon.com/TommyD, I've been able to have people actually pay money to hear what I have to say and write and do all that stuff, which is still sort of mind blowing and growing and, excited that, sort of get that rest period. August is over and media day happens and, away we go. Going to be doing stuff for the step back for Fansided. Ian Levy's Hickory High. I mean, he's as good. And I always say this, I got to make sure I do this right, because it's true. He's the best editor that I've ever worked with. And, he knows what he's doing, and it's just a great platform. I know you know what it is, and just shout out to him and just hope they keep getting clicks in a really tough time. But I'll do some stuff there, and at Thomas CD on Twitter. I'm definitely on there, so you can find me there for sure.
My go-to Knicks guy. And yes, the step back is great. Ian is a fantastic editor, and you guys just picked up like an absurdly good group of people in your last recruiting push before the year. But go check Tommy out on Twitter at Thomas letter C and then DEE. I follow him, which means you absolutely should, because I don't follow that many people. Thanks for coming on, Tommy. Everybody, for tomorrow, we'll have Miles Turner season preview. Adam will have someone on, I think, and stay tuned for that, but have a great rest of your day.